We welcome you back to Press Row, a Texags produced podcast breaking down the key storylines in Aggie football with the people who cover it closest. You can find us each week at texags.com, iTunes, or the podcast player of your choice. I'm Gabe Bach of Texags, joined today by Texags columnist Dolan Buchanan and local writers Brent Zwerneman of the Houston Chronicle and of the Bryan College Station Eagle, Travis Brown and Robert Cessna. It is episode 5 of the 2019 season. As we look back on a 28-20 loss to Auburn in the SEC opener Saturday at Kyle Field and peek ahead a little bit to the annual trip to Jerry World to take on Arkansas in an SEC West battle that, for some reason, always finds a way to be pretty interesting, more interesting than it needs to be. Welcome back, guys. How y'all doing? Week off to a good start?
I think we're all about to fall face first in the desk with exhaustion. We all look like we're dragging today.
You hit that
looking
week
forward to
four
that 11 a.m. kickoff again.
Looking forward to that open week.
You know, I've enjoyed the game in Arlington. I have. I guess it's one of those things where I like that little annual trip to the Metroplex. And
tell her to wait.
Fine. And so. But I tell you what, with the 11 a.m. deal, last year's was an 11 a.m., correct? Okay,
yes.
Walking around in that scene, you know, people were trying to create a tailgating scene. It's just not happening. There was some breakfast going on and everything.
It was rainy.
Yeah, and if it's an evening game or something like that, or even a late afternoon, hey, that's cool. You know,
they got to be better.
But, you know, with the tailgating, it's not bad. It's not a bad tailgating scene. But with the 11 a.m., you know, and I think 58,000 is by far the lowest crowd last year. So,
well, yeah. With that, you're building up around the new Rangers ballpark with the Texas Live and stuff. I know with a lot of the tailgates are going out there to actual restaurants around the spot. So it's not your traditional college football vibe, but I'm going to be biased too. I love going up there just because I'm from up there. So I get to go have a weekend at home and see the family. But I get the argument of wanting to go into the stadiums, but I think it's a great space.
This place was awesome when they first did it, this whole series, because it was out of conference. It was the marquee thing. It gives you the neutral site. And they were both up and coming a little bit with Petrino, and then you had a little run in there, and Sherman looked like he was starting to build it. And there were some really good games early, good crowds early. But I guess Arkansas likes to do this for their recruiting edge, but I think most Aggie fans are excited for your story and what Bjork was saying is – probably 5 more years of this thing, and then it'll go back to traditional home and home.
Yeah, which I think a lot of Aggies are saying is 5 years too long at this point. They were mad at still going through 2024, whereas he's saying, you know, at that point, essentially, it's done. He didn't want to go all out and say, hey, anything can happen between now and then. But, yeah, because going back to what you're saying, when it all started, it was kind of neat right at the beginning because Arkansas and A&M had been in the Southwest Conference together. I remember it was a series I'd grown up watching as a little kid, and I thought, man, this is pretty neat to cover, you know, and it's neat to cover in Arlington. But that kind of wore off when they became conference mates. And, yeah, I can see where people would want it at Kyle Field, and they'd want to make that roadie to Fayetteville as well.
I think it's all about money. And right now I can't even see how Jerry World's excited about having 2-2 teams up there, one of them unranked and very unranked. Arkansas is really bad again. And I know it's, you know, Jerry's a Arkansas guy, but there's a reason they're 11 a.m. most of the time. This right now is a bad matchup, and who wants to go watch two bad teams play right now? You know what I'm saying? And I know A&M's not a bad team, but they're not where they want to be right now either at 2-2. So there's disappointment on one side and a lot of disappointment on the other side.
Yeah, you know, I like college football games being on campus. I have to admit I'm not wild about going up to Fayetteville. So – you know, if they could play out there, maybe every other play at Jerry World every other year. I don't
Kyle Field and then Jerry World.
You know, Arkansas might do it.
They
as
might.
Much as they like being in Dallas.
I don't understand why, as A&M, you would ever agree to that in the first place. To I know it probably doesn't give Arkansas much help in recruiting, but if it gives it any, why do you want to agree to anything that even gives them the slightest help to your, you know, to a rival?
It was all about money at the beginning.
Yeah, it was money because you're getting a big paycheck every year instead of every other year. And Sherman liked going into Metroplex. There was a while there that the A&M really wasn't doing as well recruiting.
It's all about
the
Jerry
Metroplex
Jones money.
As they should. So they had to get back in there. So I can see why they did it.
So they landed those guys from Dallas because they played one game a year in Cowboys Stadium.
It was a big game.
Those Joker boys were really attractive.
Everything
to that
changed
one game
when they went to the SEC. What's weird about it is they did move it for the 2 years to Fayetteville and Kyle Field, then it went back to Jerry World.
As but Jerry got him over a barrel there and made him re-sign for more years. Yeah, for the 10-year deal.
What a shocker. Jerry got a better deal out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's look back for a minute. Well, we'll dive into our specific storylines, but what really stood out to you guys, big takeaways from the loss to Auburn?
You know, A&M's failure to be able to handle Auburn's front four and yet continuously still running right into it with running backs that were unproductive. I still kind of scratch my head about that.
I'm amazed, you know, when you look at the first six quarters against Clemson and Auburn, zero touchdowns, but yet then they seem to turn it on, and maybe it is because Clemson and Auburn have let off the gas at that point or in more of a prevent mode and saying, hey, they got this, and just on cruise control at that point and just preserve the victory. But whatever the Aggies have done in the fourth quarter, they need to do in the first three quarters moving forward because, yeah, they did it again. That same formula, which is obviously not a winning formula, it happened again, this time on their home field, which is what surprised me the most, the fact that it was at Kyle Field.
I'm just so surprised at how precision Auburn started on offense, came right out, scored 14 points in the first quarter. They played with a sense of urgency. I thought A&M was the better team. I don't know still that A&M might be the better team overall if they could start the game the way they finished it, with just getting up there, throwing the ball, just putting their athletes out on the edge, because it's what Olin said. They got absolutely zero out of their running game, where I was impressed the way Arkansas altered their running game as the game went on, because they only had the big 57-yard touchdown off the bat, but they were 4 and 5 yard to death A&M by doing little quick pitches, getting outside on the tackles. And Mike Elko's run defense, which had done a great job, just was really gashed in the times when they needed it most. That last drive, all runs on a 12 plays except for one pass. Yep. They just went right down, put it right down A&M's throat and said, we're coming at you. And that place was as loud as it was the whole game. And Auburn just quieted them.
Yeah, and no huge plays other than the one from Schwartz, only one play over 20 yards in the game, but just kind of nickeled and dimed you to death in the run game.
Yeah, I mean, and not only was it nickel and diming, I mean, it was a classic Malzahn offensive production with lots of misdirection, some trick plays, things that A&M players, I'm sure, were told about and knew about all week, and it just seemed like they bit on every misdirection, they bit on every read option, they bit on, I mean, that second touchdown where the entire defensive front bit on the play action, and there was four receivers open in the end zone that Nix or Gatewood could have picked from. It just seemed like they kind of lost their head, they lost their game plan from the beginning against what they knew was going to be coming.
You guys think we, I mean, the fan base, you kind of think, maybe as a fan base, they just kind of got out ahead of their skis with this football team a little bit. When you think about everything A&M lost, and you want them to be really, really good, is this a matter of you lost to two top 10 teams and they're damn good and you're just not a top 10 team yet? Or is A&M just not quite there yet as a football program when you consider all that you lost? Maybe that was overlooked a little bit. McCoy, Sternberger, even Gillespie. I mean, Baldry blocked his own dude on a 3rd and 1 the other day. So you missed that too. We never talk about that. Trevion Williams, Tyrell Dotson helping you at linebacker, and all those seniors defensively, they're just not elite yet. I think a lot of Aggie fans just want it to happen so badly. They're just not there yet, I don't think.
Well, I think the answer to all those questions is yes, except that did the fans get ahead of their skis? I don't necessarily believe that, because – I don't think any of us thought that they would lose last week with a freshman quarterback coming in. I don't think that the guys across the street thought that they were going to lose. They played poorly, and I think they still could play Auburn again and perhaps win. But you got one of the things that they always talk about is, you know, the nameless, faceless opponent, and so approach every game the same. And that's fine if you play at a high level every game. But, yeah, I think there's something important about getting jacked up to play an Auburn more than Yar Lamar or whatever. Yeah, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but the fact of the matter is I still think that despite all the losses that they had from last year, this should be a better team than they've shown, not necessarily against Clemson on the road. And they like Jimbo likes to talk about, hey, we move the ball. We're able to move the ball. But, you know, I don't obviously we're not there when they're breaking down the film, but he keeps saying it's like one bust here on a block or on a misroute, and that he seems to keep stressing that they're, when they break it down, they're always like one play or one missed assignment away from having a big play. So if that's true, and he's always seemed to me being a straight shooter, mm-hmm. you know, clean up that and you have a chance to be a lot, much better football team.
What I always hate about that, though, is while I do agree, coaches always say, Jackie Sherrill used to always say, take three or four plays away. Well, you can do that on both sides. Mm-hmm. If I'm Auburn, I saw three guys wide open mm-hmm. on passes that if they hit those, they score 49 points because they didn't score in those drives and those guys were wide open. And I know Auburn saying we left points out on yeah. but you're not going to have every play perfect. Well,
but
you know,
I can counter that if I'm, you know, if we're doing the yeah. point counterpoint is, if you're A&M and you take care of a ball and don't fumble, if you don't get a ridiculous personal foul penalty after not picking up third and one, you're punting 37 at the 37 instead of the 22 mm-hmm. with, man, that's probably in the end zone. Instead, a guy returns it back mm-hmm. to your 46 and you get a short field.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can go back and forth. There's a lot of things sure. A&M did offensively where they didn't execute, but there were things on the field also that we looked at, just gross mistakes that could have kept Auburn from scoring.
To your point, Gabe, I think A&M's a talented team. I think they were out-coached, flat-out out-coached yeah. on Saturday against Auburn, which I was surprised by. I thought this was going to be the year. I think the quirkiest statistic A&M has had since being in the SEC is that the home team up until last year had lost in the A&M-Auburn series, and Auburn pulls out the late victory. I thought this is a year with Jimbo Fisher on his home field. Last year at Kyle Field, the only loss they had was a two-point, you know, setback against Clemson that came down to a failed two-point conversion. I thought this was the year that changed. So I was as surprised as anybody among the 100,000 in Kyle Field that it went the way it did. And so now in terms of saying, this team just isn't where we thought it was going to be at this point.
It's not elite yet, though.
I wouldn't say it's elite, but I do think there were a lot of hiccups that they need to address, mm-hmm. but it's not a talent question. It was they need to get some things squared away in terms of coaching, and I believe Jimbo realizes that.
Yeah, I believe answer that I made the long answer was that I don't blame the fans for thinking that they should have been good.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what fans do. You want to be great, but – you also got to let them build. Not everybody's Urban. You know, not everybody – in terms of, like, that situation at OU doesn't mean this situation's happening here in year two. And, I mean, at Florida or Bob Stoops at OU, so on and so forth, is, boy, they did – just the point is I wanted to make – they did lose a ton and are missing those guys in a huge, huge way. In a huge, huge way.
Yeah, I think that the biggest question was see how these guys were going to fill those voids with – Sternberger, but then he said, well, you return your top four receivers after Sternberger. But I think it's just become more evident about how vital those tight end routes were and how much of a security blanket Sternberger was for Mond with guys that I don't think he necessarily still has a whole lot of confidence with other than Jamon Osman. I mean, I always go back to the Kendrick Rogers quote where he was saying he was kind of breaking down what each receiver's talents were. And he said, yeah, Kendrick has great hands. Not the greatest route runner, but, you know, he's athletic and has good hands. And it's like, why are you even throwing that out there if it isn't a real issue? So I think there's still some confidence that needs to build up. And I think missing Sternberger, a guy that he had an instant connection with, is really, really, really glaring.
One of the things I asked Jimbo about today was, you know, of course, false starts and the delay of game in the third quarter. You're playing catch-up ball. You're down 21-3 at that point. I think the most important position, and I heard y'all touch on it this morning on your show, is center. I think yes. that's probably the biggest position, position they're missing right now with Eric McCoy with the New Orleans Saints. And obviously he's showing how valuable he is to them and how valuable he was to the Aggies with what he did. I remember a few years ago us kind of looking at each other in the press box, his snaps floated. Man, he's got to put a little more zip on his snaps. Once he figured that out, he became the perfect center.
Yeah.
Because he was already bullish. He was already physical. He was already smart. Once he figured out how to snap the ball with a little zip, then he had it down. And Colton Prater, Ryan McCollum continues to fight. It's been I'm not going to say underreported because I think we've all mentioned it. McCollum has fought health issues so far. He just hasn't been the guy who was the spring drills MVP. Prater is not the ideal guy you want at center, and I think that's shown through through four games.
Yeah.
I just thought A&M would be closer to Clemson and the Alabamas and Georgias, and probably they are right now. Now I wonder if they're closer to Mississippi State and South Carolina than they are to Clemson and Alabama. And I guess we'll see in 3 weeks, because they're going to get another test in 3 weeks, and we'll see if they can close that gap, because I thought they'd beat Auburn. I'm still not convinced that they're the best team, particularly at home, to lose that game. So we'll see what happens in the next 3 weeks.
All the chirping then comes out among the fan base, which I think is pretty unwarranted. Okay, year two, you're four games into your second year, but it brings up a topic you wanted to bring to the table.
Okay, yeah, and it comes down to, is Jimbo the guy? And I think up until last week, that wasn't even in question. And then the question arises, and I do believe he's the guy. And I started thinking about some of the examples along the way I still hear, and I know y'all do too, I still hear from a lot of Florida State fans, mad that Jimbo left. Think about that. Do you think Arizona writers are hearing from Texas A&M fans, you know, tweeting at them about Kevin Sumlin? Or
no.
You know what I'm saying? So you have fans. You could tell when Jimbo left Florida State, writers were not happy he was leaving.
Yeah, it's funny.
Fans were not happy. They weren't indifferent. They were unhappy. They're still, years later, they're still unhappy. Look, Jimbo was not perfect at Florida State by any means. Tom Herman worked him over in a bowl game, right? You know?
Yes.
So he certainly laid his eggs along the way. But I do believe he's the guy that's going to get this program in position along the way, you know, in a few years. Not this year, obviously. Starting next year, within a couple years, to be in contention for an SEC West crown. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And my example is looking at the way the folks who covered Florida State and Florida State fans still react to this day when Jimbo Fisher left Florida State in December 2017.
Because old Willie Taggart's running that Gulf Coast offense down there.
I think people from Arizona, Aggies, would be talking to people from Arizona sad someone left if he didn't want a national championship here.
Yeah, no.
I think if you win a national championship.
I guess that's my point.
I think that when you win a national championship, just about any sport.
Sure.
I mean, you know, that's the ultimate. And if anybody wins a national championship here in football at A&M, what street are they going to rename? Or
yeah,
whatever?
and then he leaves four years later.
Then he leaves. I mean, I could see why Florida State, and you talk about extremes.
But see, Jimbo's so sharp and he's so engaging and all those things, and he's so passionate that those fans are still mad over there that he left.
Oh, he was
a
great guy.
We still hear from them.
He dealt with everybody. Yeah. Can you imagine dealing with a great guy and winning a national championship?
Sure.
I mean, Bobby Knight was a jerk. You know, I mean, everybody says, even the media, but Jimbo, and then your replacement is Willie Taggart and seeing what he's doing?
Yeah.
Well, I do think that Aggies forget and they overreact not all of them, but some very on our boards, very reactionary. What was Jackie Sherrill's second year record here? Something it's probably a losing record.
Oh, absolutely.
It took him three or 4 years to get it going. I was working in Austin when Mack Brown was hired. It took him 8 years to win a national championship, 9 years, something like that. I think Dabo Swinney was very modest in his first couple of years.
I almost want to say he had a losing record in his second year.
I don't know if he had a losing record.
I think he lost 11 games in his first 2 years.
But there was a reason they were always using the term Clemsoning until just about 3 years ago.
That's right, 2015.
Yeah. So, there are instances and 4 or 5 examples of coaches that have come into the right situation and turned a program around and made a championship-caliber program in 2 years. But there's also plenty of coaches that have been very successful, but it takes a little while to get all the things in place. I think Fisher, for the offense that he wants to run, he still needs to recruit more speed and bigger guy, more speed out at receiver and bigger guys in the offensive line. And when he does that, then you'll start seeing the
there
kind
are
of
no
results
quick fixes
they had
on that offensive line. There's no there,
there's
about
not.
That.
You know, yeah. I think that had Eric stayed, obviously it would have made a big difference, but I don't know if it would have been enough.
Well, and I think that. And this is really, really, truly no knock on Kellen Mond, but Jimbo's got to get his guy. He's still working with Sumlin's guys at quarterback. And I think Kellen Mond is a good quarterback, and I think he is really adept in the system. But I think once Jimbo Fisher starts getting some of his quarterback guys in there, that's when you're going to start seeing things really take off as well, because that is the heart and soul of a Jimbo Fisher offense, is a guy who can handle and compute at the same level as Fisher can, and you'll start seeing those guys come in like that. I think that's when it'll really take off.
I'll say, to Fisher's credit, he hasn't had a knee-jerk reaction and inserted his guy in right away, talking about his guy being Calzada or even James Foster, in one of those guys, and said, Kellen Mond, you're not my guy.
Well, if Mond's been in the system and started every game last year, and
Mond has become his guy.
Right, yeah. But if it takes you this long to fully grasp the system, you can't just throw a true freshman in there and expect him to have full grasp of the system. We even talked to Jamon Osmond today about just how complex this thing really is. Can you imagine right now Calzada facing Bama's defense, going on the road to Georgia? I mean, clearly, I'd be – and plus, Mond wasn't the issue the other day. You can blame him for Clemson, but he was – go back and watch the tape.
Yeah, no, he was far throwing bullets. From the issue. I mean, we already talked about the offensive line. It all starts right there.
Yeah.
I think that was the main issue, if you're going to sit there and say, here's why they didn't have any touchdowns over the first three quarters.
Could not run the football.
Started up front. Yeah.
Yeah.
Offensive line and maybe play calling. Maybe just don't run in. Sure. If you can't run up the gut, do something Malzahn does. Get it outside the tackles. Or, you know, just throw the football.
And that brings us to your point, Travis, is along the way, if you're going to run a Jimbo Fisher offense, they've got to figure out the here and now. Yeah, you talked about recruiting and developing for future, but for 2019, Jimbo's trying to win this Saturday, and he's got to have his run game for that offense to work.
Right. It's been a little confusing just to kind of try to peel back the curtain and see what they have been trying to do since Jayshon Corbin went out in the Clemson game, because everyone just kind of assumed that Isaiah Spiller is going to be the guy, the bell cow, because he showed that he could do that against some of the lesser talent earlier in the season. And then it comes out the last two games starting Jacob Gavotti. I know the first game against Lamar was a kind of disciplinary issue seeming thing that he brought up. But then you come back and then it seems like they're saying that they can't necessarily trust Spiller or don't want to give him that kind of weight as a true freshman. But there's plenty of other true freshmen that are carrying that kind of weight and have carried that kind of weight under Jimbo Fisher, or even just guys who are first year in the program in the system. I'm interested to see what's going on between Kabodi and Spiller there, because you thought Spiller was going to be the guy, and he's shown that he has a little bit more of that explosion, a little bit more of that vision than Kabodi has. And then something that has been asked over and over again is, well, then is Kellen Mond going to have to carry the load of that run game? And it's a little bit, I know, comparing apples to oranges, because you had Travion Williams here over the last couple of years that they really could lean on to push that run game. But it hasn't been since the Alabama game last year that Kellen Mond led the team in rushing yards. It's because you had Travion Williams around. But he had 90 in that game, and that was one of the last games other than the Gator Bowl, but kind of everyone was running well in that game, so that's a little bit of a hard comparison. But that Alabama game was the last one that Kellen Mond really kind of took the game on his legs and was able to do that. And it seems like with what Fisher is getting him to do to be more of a pocket passer and what he thinks he needs to do to be more of a pocket passer, he's shying away from wanting to run, from wanting to pick up the first down, kind of get some momentum building runs in an effort to keep the chains moving with the pass. And I don't know if that's not going to work through the rest of this season.
I don't know that he needs to be the leading rusher. But I think if he ran more often, whether it be on a design run or a zone read where he keeps it, or a timely scramble here and there, just showing more frequently the threat that he can be will open up the opportunities or increase the odds for the running backs, because then as a defensive lineman, I have to pay attention to. Sometimes you'll see a run inside – and it's an end crashing down that makes the tackle. Maybe it's a 4-yard gain or a 3-yard gain. But if that end has to wait and look and see what the quarterback's going to do, because he may keep it, then that play can turn into an 8 to 10 yard gain, because the guys who are blocked, that running back's going by them, and it's not the end coming down to get them. And I just think that opponents, for the most part, have no fear about Mond running, because either Fisher's not allowing him to. They're not calling plays to, or he just it's been coached out of, and the running instincts may have been coached out of him.
And when he does, he's successful doing it.
Also, anyone else think the old line about you can never have too many quality running backs is really coming true at A&M mm-hmm. at this point too? They're down to three scholarship running backs in the offseason. In the summer, you know, we're talking about how, boy, they're loaded at running back. Now, Denarik Prince, and I don't know the background, I don't know the story on why he decided, you know, midseason, four games in, to walk away from the program. Here's a guy who very well, you never know, a couple games could have earned, he had a good spring game, walks away, puts his name into the transfer portal. Now they're down to three guys in that situation. Yeah. So suddenly it's become an area of concern if you have another injury or two, just like you did with Jashaun Corbin.
And not one of those three guys has done anything in a big game
right.
in their career.
What I like to see happen, I think, all in touchdown. When you look at this team and use the fourth quarter as an example, they really only need to average probably around 100 yards, 125, since they're not real that offensive line. I'm concerned about it. But if they could get 100, 125 put Mond in that he gets 40 or 45 of those, they can pass for three. He saw 335, 350 easy with those receivers in Mond. They can still easily get to 475, 500 yards of offense and control the clock because through Mond's arm, Osmond and these other guys, they don't have Trayvon Williams in that offensive line. They're not going to rush for 190 in good opponents. They need to find a way to get consistently to me 125 round there, do the rest in the passing game. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat, and right now running right into the teeth of that anybody's that defensive line is not going to get
yeah,
it
that
done.
Especially that one. Wouldn't have to skin any cat.
You don't have to already be. Thought there. You know, if you had to, they could add your guy, Anaya Smith, into the running game. He seems like he can do it.
Do whatever
all,
you
so
can to get
not?
That guy on the field. Right.
Isn't that it? Yeah. Just find a way to get that guy on the field. And I asked Kellen.
He seems like a guy who'd be a pretty good running back.
Do you have to go four wide to get that guy on the field, or in your standard package when you still want to play Rodgers and Osmond and Courtney Davis and Buckley? Something in that normal set, which is typically three wide receivers and tight end, something like that. Is there still a lot of space for Anaya Smith to make an impact? And Mond said, absolutely. Got to figure out a way to get that guy on the field. You give it to him on a jet sweep, throw it to him out in a bubble, and just put him out in space. He can run routes and get open. That was as open as anybody got all day was his touchdown catch.
That should be easy finding one. I'd like, all right, among the receivers who has it, and I don't care if he's a slot or receiver, that's guy you can put him anywhere, I bet. Who hasn't been productive, and okay, Anaya is going to start until you get productive.
Drop a ball, you're out.
Yeah, I thought that
in.
Was a curious part of it. Yeah, I believe it was you who asked Jimbo why wasn't he, you know, part of the game earlier.
Mm-hmm. Until the 426 mark.
Yeah, man, if the guy's getting it done, and he got it done, obviously, against Lamar, get him out there. Get him out there earlier.
Yeah.
Until he shows you he can't do it, get him out there.
It makes you wonder if he just isn't 100% yet, or they're worried about some kind of aggravating
Yeah, during practice, maybe not looking as good as what we see during games.
Or just the injuries that kind of plagued him the first 2 weeks.
The games matter, too.
Yeah.
The guy's really good. Yeah. He's good. He gives you that Kirk-like element. He might not be as good as Kirk, right? But, I mean, that element wasn't here with the current regime. This true freshman's come on, give you a little bit extra juice, as they say.
He's not as fast. Nobody in college football is as fast as Anthony Schwartz. But that play that Auburn scored on early, he's the only guy, it looks like, on A&M's roster that you could have run that play to.
Mm-hmm. Good
right?
point.
Yeah.
And maybe he could have done something with it.
Going back to your point about adding more speed to this roster. As
two, three times a game, get him into play like that in a reverse or whatever.
Well, then you got to think about it, and then all of a sudden your eyes are going a different place and you can misdirection some stuff going on too. Let's go to defense, though, and the need OB. And they're making some plays behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, top 20 in tackles for loss, things like that, but just not really getting home at the quarterback.
Yeah,
right
they
now.
Need to get a pass rush upgraded. What do they have now, about six sacks?
Six.
I don't know, six.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they would be a better pass rush this year than they were last year. I thought Michael Clemens was going to add an explosive. We had heard how athletic he is. We had heard that he couldn't be blocked. Well, somebody's found a way to block him, and he hasn't been a threat. And you've got an Arkansas team that wants to pass, and then you got Tua Tagovailoa, and then you look at some of the other guys later on the season. And if you're not going to get a pass rush, I know the secondary's gotten better, but there's too many good receivers and too many good quarterbacks coming up later this month in October. That if you don't get a pass rush, you're offense better find its way out, because the only way you're going to win is in a shootout.
It's true. Yeah. South Carolina, Ole Miss, they're all good. Mississippi State, they're all going to throw the ball.
Yeah, if you're not getting to Nick Starkwell, there are Trump. They are in Trump.
So. Well, then you better start
this
week and show that you can, because if you don't do it against – well, you didn't do it against Lamar.
I'd say
you?
Rip that Justin Bieber shirt right off of him, but apparently he's already did that.
He beat you to it.
Yeah,
he sent it to you.
And it is just curious. I mean, you brought it up, but we heard so much about how Michael Clemens had transformed his body and had used the season off, and yeah, and it just it's hard to even remember when he's on the field and when he's off the field in most of these games. So it'd be curious to see if he's going to be able to find any of that.
And if he doesn't. Soon, maybe, you know, it's time to put DeMarvin Leal out there and see what he does.
We saw him a little bit more the other day. We saw Martin, who made a tackle for loss and looked explosive. We saw number 15, Jeremiah Martin, with Tyree Johnson.
CBS showed the replay of Clemens biting hard on the reverse, and they said he was the main reason that reverse went. So he did get some airtime on CBS.
Yeah,
on
I heard his name plenty on that play.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, he did get some recognition.
Another name, off the radar kind of name, but every time
they say off the record, and I go, Gabe, this is Press Row.
And every time they put him in there in the sub packages and he's blitzing right up the middle, he's so sneaky and he gets through there and he makes some things happen as Hansford. He's a pretty good little pass rusher in there, man. He made some things happen and it didn't get home on the quarterback, but another name I'm just watching closely. And Hines has had a few busts now, and they started playing Hansford a little bit. He's getting more and more and more snaps as he's getting more and more comfortable with that position change and fully healthy.
I have noticed his name, and once again, it's just watching the game, and I didn't really see a lot, notice Hines or Buddy Johnson that much when they were running. But I did notice Hansford a couple times, but I would think the coaches – Elko would know that, so you might have hit on something. Maybe he will see more playing time.
All right, so as we close it out, Arkansas next. You're going to have some Arkansas storylines here, but a 22-point favorite. Yet this game, Vegas think this is going to be a blowout, but A&M's limping in. So is Arkansas coming off the loss of San Jose State, but Starkle, Chad Morris, Chavis, half the defensive staff, and Raheem Boyd, this is their Super Bowl.
I think this is a good game for A&M to come back after the loss to Auburn, looking ahead for the week off, getting ready for Alabama. It is somewhat of a rivalry game. You mentioned they want to get to Starkle. Starkle was a lovable guy when he was here. His teammates always talked well of him. We could see that when he was here. Boyd, Chavis, they'll all want to do well. Chad Morris is an Aggie playing at Jerry World, even though it's 11 a.m. There's a lot of positives. And Arkansas, as bad as they've been the last few years, play A&M well. And so I think A&M, maybe we'll see a sense of urgency. Maybe this is the game A&M goes out and wins 49-12, and it's not Lamar or it's not Texas State. Maybe they jump on them. And we know Arkansas will give their best effort, but it wasn't good enough to beat San Jose State. So I just think it comes at a good point for A&M, because A&M needs, what did Jimbo say, dot the I's, cross the T's. Well, five games into the season, I think it's time to do that.
You would never know Chad Morris was an Aggie by asking.
No, that's right.
That's how bad he wants to beat Texas A&M. Because when you ask him about it, he just starts talking about SEC football and football in
and
general.
That game in Arlington?
Yes.
Got to know your constituents. You know, and you got to understand, and I've known enough people from Arkansas.
Small words.
The last thing you'd want to do is, you know, talk about how beloved Texas A&M is to you.
Well, I'm going Arkansas on the points. A&M wins this game, but I think it's going to be closer than Vegas does. Blowout or tight game? Around the horn here.
I think two touchdowns. I think A&M will call the dogs off at the end if they get a chance.
Man, I'm still putting me on the spot here, but I'm going to go with Cease about two touchdowns, A&M.
You know, everything in my head tells me that I should expect a blowout, because Arkansas was lucky to get out of away from Portland State.
Yeah.
But I keep seeing a team that's you know, just hadn't hit its stride. And all those previous games, I'm going to think that it's going to be maybe not a nail-biter, but I don't think they're going to just run away and hide from them either.
Give me A&M by 10 points, because they've continued to prove that they're going to settle for some field goals down there in the red zone and not punch it in. So Instead of two touchdowns, give me 10 points.
I can see the 10 to 14 range, which is still a lot tighter than 22. You know, we're all going Arkansas on the points here.
We're saying having to settle for field goals, and it was this game last year that was close because Small couldn't hit one.
Right.
If I'm wrong, make me a pull boy. That's all there is.
Yet, you know? John Chavis could be the serum that this offense needs to get rolling. So
I like that. That's
we'll
good.
See. It's going to be interesting. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you so much. That's Press Row. You can find us at texags.com or the podcast player and outlet of your choice, iTunes, of course. Big thanks to all these guys, Dalton Hughes producing the show. Press Row, we'll be back next week to break that down and look ahead to the bye week. Got that? I know we're all looking ahead to bye week, so we'll do that next week on Press Row, texags.com.